It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now. The Score!
I mean, I think you saw it last year. You know, I think we went from 7 under to basically getting back to 500 in that stretch. And so obviously things can change, but certainly, yes, the expectation is that. Yeah, I think we have a good sense of where we are and our game plan going forward, but you never know what happens in a 7-game stretch.
Yeah, you know what happens in a 100-game stretch, though. That's part of the problem. That was Jed Hoyer giving his pre-deadline state of the team comments yesterday. So let's talk some baseball with Mike Farren. He's on Twitter at Mike_Farren, play-by-play announcer and host at SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio. And with us now on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline, download the Circus Sports app today. Hi, Mike.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We are doing really well, man. Thank you so much for being available and joining us. As you can imagine, watching the Cubs so far through 100 games has been frustrating. When you watch them, what do you see?
I mean, I see the team that's pretty similar to what I expected them to be really the last 2 years. I mean, what do the kids call them? Mid? Right. Like they're kind of a mid team. Right. There's a lot of really solid major league players on their roster. They lack the stars that help to push you over the top. And they need, you know, good performance and above average performance from a number of guys on the roster because they don't have one that can carry them. So I'm not really all that surprised that they're in this situation because I didn't think that they were that different a roster than they were a year ago. And you know, the difference between a 78 and an 84 win team is like one win a month. And that's just kind of where they've been as they've tried to, you know, build from, I guess, the dregs of the early 2020s to being back to contention. They've been okay. They just haven't had the players that have been able to push them over the edge.
Do you think that means that they need to maybe change up strategy in their approach to roster building?
Yeah, I think that there's probably something to that. You know, I think the problem is that for whatever reason, whether it's been because they haven't had the financial resources that they've needed or that there has been a reluctance to part with the players it would take to get the deal done. Like if you look at via trade, they haven't been able to push in for star players that would change the complexion of the roster. I think on the other side, you know, they also haven't been willing to go to the levels to be able to land that superstar externally. You know, they were really fortunate in that, you know, the mid-20 teens that they were drafted high and they hit on all of those picks. You know, the guys like Bryant and Schwarber, and you're making a couple of really calculated trades to be able to add premium talent to the organization. And like I don't want to besmirch their farm system entirely because I think it's pretty solid. It just doesn't have anybody in it that you look at and go, man, that's a superstar. Tate Horton has a chance to be pretty good. I know he's been battling injury, but for the most part, they're just kind of like good players. And it doesn't feel like they have, whether it's because they don't have the resources available to them or haven't been willing to really feel like it's the right time to push all the chips in or more chips in to get those stars, that they haven't been willing to do it to that point. And that leaves you with a team that's fighting for wild card berths. Like now, if you get in the playoffs, like let's not forget the last two National League champions were like 84, 85 win teams, right? So once you get to the playoffs, anything can happen, but they just have not been able to acquire the player that makes an 84, 85 win season more of a floor than a ceiling.
And Mike, as I look at what's happening in modern baseball and how good pitching is, it's so hard to hit. And interestingly, it's made the home run more important because of how difficult it is to string smaller successful outcomes together. You're just going to make three outs before you have all those good things happen. Unless, you know, you get a walk and a bloop and a blast and you get three runs.
Yeah.
And it's how do you build a team knowing that you're at such a disadvantage offensively without that kind of power up and down your lineup?
It's a really great question, Dan. And I think back to something Nick Pecora, who covers the Diamondbacks in the Arizona Republic, said to me probably 5 or 6 years ago. He goes, how is it that it took us a century to figure out that the most efficient way to score runs is to hit homers, right? Like, that's really what it amounts to. That's the best way to do it. I mean, I think there are a lot of different ways that you can try to go about it. I think not the least of which is guys that get on base, right? Like, you need to be able to create traffic. Either that's with, you know, high average hitters, which there are fewer and fewer of, to your point, because it has never been harder to hit, or by guys that really grind down opposing pitchers and draw a lot of walks and don't chase out of the strike zone. And then you need to have enough power in your lineup that you can run the ball out of the ballpark, for a crooked number. It's not necessarily easy to do, but it all sounds great in theory, right? Until you start getting it together in practice. And I think part of the problem with where the Cubs sit is that they have those guys that theoretically should do that. You know, if you were buying into, say, a Suzuki's second half a year ago, you would think that he would be one of those guys that could deliver a near 900 OPS, be that monster in the middle of the lineup. You know, even if you expected some regression from Cody Bellinger, I don't think in a down offensive year you would have expected him to slug 410, right? Like, that you're probably looking at a higher slugging percentage. So some of it is from that performance, but I think it's you have to be able to create as many run scoring opportunities as you can, because you're right, you can't, like, the idea of stringing three singles together to score a run, you might be able to do that once a game or twice a game, but it's not going to happen very frequently like it did when guys were thrown in the mid-80s, 40 years ago.
Obviously, along with talking about the Cubs, we are tasked to talk a lot about the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been fun, Mike. It's not been fun. As bad as they've been, did you think they were going to be this bad?
No, I did not. I did not think they were going to be a 120 loss team. In fact, I kind of, like, I saw what Chris Getz was trying to do, right? He wanted to, because he thought they were going to have adequate enough starting pitching, he tried to build a good defensive team behind them, albeit one that was going to struggle offensively. Well, the problem is that the defense just hasn't been very good. It's not been maybe quite as disastrous as it was a year ago. And then the bullpen has been awful on top of it. And then add in the fact that they haven't had a good offense. So, you know, I think usually when you have a season like this, when you lose 110 or 115 games, which is certainly the way that they're trending, there is some more bad luck than you would generally expect that comes about as part of it. I mean, it's really tough to be sitting here on July 23rd and say you have 25 blown saves and 27 wins, right? Like, that just doesn't happen very often. So I do think that there is a little bit of, like, if they didn't have bad luck, they'd have no luck at all. At the same time, it's just not a good roster. And I think what you saw early on was Chris Getz was smart enough to pivot and think, hey, this isn't going to be a quick rebuild. We're going to have to make a lot of moves to get this team better. And I think that's a big reason why you're hearing Garrett Crochet's name a lot.
Well, the good thing is that you get an opportunity to watch everything with your job. So what are the things that have brought you, like, baseball joy so far this season?
That's a good question. I think the Royals being as good as they have been, I think that's been a lot of fun. I always enjoyed the style of play that they've tried to play. I think that's kind of what, you know, we grew up on, right? We're children of the 80s to some degree. And, you know, we remember that kind of, you know, how the running game was important and doubles and triples. And, you know, I mean, Kauffman Stadium, if you put the turf in, it'd look exactly the same as it did, you know, in 1982. So
it doesn't hurt having a projected 8 WAR player too.
Well, that doesn't hurt too. I mean, he's putting together, Bobby Witt Jr. is putting together one of the best seasons in Royals history. And and it'll probably end up being the best by somebody not named George Brett in their franchise history, which is really remarkable. And Salvador Perez is also having a sensational year. So, but that's been fun to see too, because like they, like I said this the first week of the season, I was like, man, I wonder if we underrated the Royals just in what they did in free agency in getting competency in their rotation, right? Like I didn't expect Seth Lugo to be an all-star, and you know, Michael Wacha has really pitched well. You figured he was going to miss some time with injuries, but there's a huge upgrade over what they had had before. And just those two moves alone have made them a far more competitive team in what has been a competitive division. So I've enjoyed watching that. I think that's been a lot of fun to watch. I think Baltimore is a blast. Like they're really talented. That position player group is really good. I mean, obviously Henderson and Rutschman get a lot of the ink there, but like, if you talk to people around that team, that one of the most indispensable guys they have is Jordan Westberg, who was an all-star this year. And is just, you know, when you hear scouts talk about a guy being made up, right, he might as well be the poster child for that. So that's a fun one. And I think too, the, you know, as kind of underwhelming as the teams are, the National League wildcard race is really interesting, especially with what Atlanta's gone through. You know, they're without their best pitcher and their best position player for almost the entirety of the season.
You know, Albies now is hurt.
Yeah, now Albies is out for 8 weeks. They still don't have a timetable on when Michael Harris II is coming back, who's a, you know, dynamic center fielder. And Max Fried went on the injured list too. And while it's going to be a minor injury, it feels like for him with, well, ulnar neuritis, like you're still down him for a couple weeks, and they're only what, four up in the wild card race for the top spot. So that makes things a little bit tighter there. I mean, everybody in the National League, with the exception of really Colorado and Miami, are in the mix, and that makes it fun. You know, it's Pete Rozelle somewhere is pumping his fist, going, "Man, I knew it could be this way."
To speak to your point about the Royals, I just saw this because our buddy Josh Nelson at Sax Machine retweeted it. They have the 15 best seasons of Kansas City Royals WAR. Mm-hmm. Right now, through 101 games, Bobby Witt Jr. is at 11. He's at 11 on the list. Then there's a bunch of full seasons. The crazy part is that George Brett 1980 season, he only played 117 games and had a 9.1 WAR.
Yeah, well, he hit 390 insane. That year. Yeah, he hit 390. I mean, that's the closest that anybody in a full season has come to 400 since Ted Williams. So, and Brett was a terrific defender too. So, yeah, I mean, that's what Witt's doing though. Is, I mean, I think the first name I saw that same list, Lawrence, right before I came on, and I think the first name that wasn't George Brett on that list was Daryl Porter. So, I mean, we're talking about like the best non-George Brett season in 50 years in Royals history. That's pretty remarkable.
It really, really is. What do you make of what you've seen from Paul Skenes?
It's been sensational. You know, so like I was one of those guys in the draft last year because the top of that draft was so loaded that was much more on Cruz and Lankford at the top than Skenes. And the reason why, it had very little to do with Skenes' performance. There were a couple of things that you worried about with the way his fastball played, that, you know, it's not really a swing and miss fastball, you know, for a guy that throws 101 miles an hour. And you know, the sweeping breaking ball was kind of okay, but felt like his changeup was the best pitch. And since he got into pro ball, he added this, what everybody is calling a splinker, but it's essentially a sinker that acts like a splitter and is 94 miles an hour. And like the guys that have had that over the last decade are like Yuris Familia and Johan Duran, right? Like guys that finish games. You don't have starters that have that pitch. The makeup on that kid is incredible. Like he is just a really special guy. Like the stories of him from the Air Force Academy and his leadership are out of this world. The stories from LSU, Jay Johnson tells this great story about halfway through last season at LSU, he and Dylan Cruz walked into his office and said, "Hey, I know we're going to be gone next year, but how do we keep the culture that we've built here alive once we leave?" Like, no, what 21-year-old thinks like that, right? So I think it's been great. It's been really fun seeing the Pirates compete. And when, you know, I know Jared Jones is out now, but when Jones and Mitch Keller and Skenes start, they have an absurd record. They've won something like 65% of their starts when they've started and they've scored three runs or fewer. Like, that's how good those three starters have been. Imagine if they add some offense at the deadline, how difficult that team is going to be to play down the stretch.
You're talking with Mike Farron on the Bernstein and Holmes show. You want to check him out on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Now, you didn't react to the music that we brought with which we brought you in, but we had a texter who said, hey, whatever you do, play ELO as he's coming in. So we asked the tech why, and he said, apparently you, and we did, we used Mr. Blue Sky, and you've got some sort of allergy to Jeff Lynn.
Yeah, I just am not an ELO fan. So, like, my first gig in radio was as a classic rock disc jockey, and the best way to get over classic rock is to be a disc jockey. And so, like, ELO can go pound sand. They can take Billy Joel out back, and they can all run away.
Billy Joel catches a stray.
No, that's not catching a stray. Like, Billy Joel is like, Billy Joel, I would rather take shots at Billy Joel before I take shots at the Eagles. Like, Billy Joel is the most overrated artist.
Now, wait a second. As an employee of Sirius XM now, you know there's a whole Billy Joel channel.
We don't talk about that, Dan.
my wife is a New Jersey native and a huge fan, and I didn't believe her. I thought it was a bit. I'm like, oh, is this, what? Like, this is a whole, there's a lot of Billy Joel songs on this channel. She's like, yeah, this is the Billy Joel channel. And then it's like biographical information, and he's telling stories, and then it's like people doing covers of Billy Joel. I think it's it's plenty for me. I've had enough.
Do we have to have an intervention with your wife to let her know what good music sounds like?
I'm just saying. Probably.
I'm saying.
Just bring in Jim Peterik to play for her, and it'll be fine. Like, you get the local guy.
He's right here. He was in the building the other day with his purple hair walking around.
He's always everywhere.
I forgot about forget which comedian it was, but there's one comedian that does an incredible whole set on Piano Man and how it's really just self-satisfaction by Joel. Like, I'm such a good piano player that, you know, everyone knows it, but yet I'm still here. And they're so lucky to have me. And that I can't say the part that's the funniest, but
his whole body of work is self-congratulatory. The entertainer, if I don't get sold, I'll get put in the back on the discount rack. You're selling records. Like, what? Congratulations, you've made it. Thanks for rubbing it in, jerk.
See, I told you this was going to be a totally money segment.
It's still rock and roll to me.
God, you're the worst. Mike, I've got a stat for you, and I don't know if anyone around your staff or around SiriusXM would even think about this stat, but I got a stat for you to play with.
Okay.
The White Sox have not won a game on Monday this season. They had a really good chance this past Monday, but they did not. So for the season, they have not won a game on Monday.
Well, it's nice that they've saved their 27 victories for the other 6 days of the week, right? So they're averaging 4.5 wins through, what, 4 months on the other 6 days of the week?
That's right.
I'm going to tell you right now, Lawrence, I don't like their chances of making the postseason this year.
Yeah, I think we're probably going to have to...
You think they're sellers at the deadline? It
kind of feels like they might be sellers.
You know, what's funny is I actually think they're kind of an interesting seller at the deadline, though. Like, you know, beyond Crochet, like, and I'm skeptical that they'll be able to move Luis Robert because you just don't see very often position players with years and years of control left get moved at the deadline, right? The Soto deal was really unique in that regard. But, like, there's no shortstops available. Paul DeJong has had kind of an almost okay year, right? Like, he's a guy that there should be interest in. I would add Tommy Pham to my clubhouse in a heartbeat because I know what teammates and what executives have had Tommy Pham say about his professionalism and his intensity and how it has helped teams. You know, I talked a lot to the guys in Arizona here who raved about his addition last year. So, like, Tommy Pham is a really interesting piece. I think, you know, some team is going to want to try and figure out if they can get more out of Michael Kopech, if they can get him to stop tumbling down the mound, right? Like, Eric Fetty has thrown the ball really well for them this year. He is an interesting guy because he has another year of control left and there's going to be a lot of suitors for him. I don't know why Steven Wilson hasn't performed to a higher level. That guy's actually a pretty good reliever. Like, you start to look at the number of players that they have that should be interesting to other clubs. They're not your typical 115 loss, there's nothing left in the cupboard team, which makes the next week, I think, kind of thrilling for them because they should be able to get some players back that if they aren't stars, and they should be able to get some really good prospects back for Crochet, at least they're team players that you can see having a role on the next good White Sox team, whenever that is, if that starts in 2026 or 2027.
Mike, this is a hell of a lot of fun. Thanks for taking the time for us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's always good to be on back home. So it's a little warmer here today, I think, than there, but less humid.
Yeah, you're doing all right. But if we can ever help out, feel free to hit us up. And we're definitely going to hit you up again before the season's over.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Take care.
That's Mike Farron. Tonight, the Cubs continue their series against the Brewers at Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage starts at 6:30. First pitch, 7:05 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network.
Let's go down to Big Ten Media Days. Our guy Jeremy Warner is going to join us to discuss. I think that's him now on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center... Keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Our teams are battling for the right to return here on December 7th. The first time the number one and number two teams in the overall standings will square off for the Big Ten championship. The new expanded college football playoff will give more Big Ten teams the opportunity to compete for a national championship.
The voice of Tony Petitti, Big Ten commissioner. And the coaches were up there, and they took a couple questions, and they kept things moving.
They
today,
really did.
Is what they did. So let's hear from somebody who was there to witness all of it and talk to these coaches. He's our guy Jeremy Werner, publisher of IlliniInquirer.com, at jwerner247, and with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. So what are your first impressions, top of mind for you, Jeremy?
It's weird. I'm kind of looking at, I'm on Lucas Oil Stadium turf here, and I'm looking at the logos, and I see UCLA's logo next to Rutgers. I see Oregon's logo next to Penn State. Make that make sense, right? But this is the new world of college football, guys, and I think it's a missed opportunity for the Big Ten to have maybe USC or Oregon here on the first day, kind of kicking this thing off. Ohio State is kind of the main program here. Of course, Illinois and Northwestern here today as well, but it's a new era of college athletics, college sports, and there's so many questions we still have to answer. But when it comes to this football season, we're going to see Oregon and Penn State and Ohio State, Northwestern, Illinois, Minnesota, UCLA, like all these schools are in the same conference now. We'll get to see what it looks like. It's certainly going to have a lot better games. The Big Ten championship games are going to be better because you're actually going to have the two best teams playing each other. But I have so many questions about what happens with the house settlement, what happens with revenue sharing, what's the next step in realignment, because Florida State and Clemson are suing their own conference to try and get out of it. So what are those next dominoes, and where does that lead the Big Ten? I think it's only going to get more condensed here, so be interesting to see where we are in 10-15 years. But right now, this is obviously a new era for the Big Ten with these four West Coast teams in here.
Let's take Illinois out of it and the teams that aren't there out of it. What was the coach that you were most interested to hear from today?
Well, I think the story of the Big Ten this year, and it's maybe a boring question or boring answer, but it's Ryan Day, because this guy's 39-3 in the Big Ten, and he's on the hot seat probably, right? That's insane to think about. But he's just three losses to Michigan in three straight seasons. And they, guys, they've returned so many guys that were second or third or fourth round draft picks if they would have stayed in the draft. And they brought all these guys out there. They're paying them a bunch of money. This is going to be a very expensive roster for Ohio State. Of course, they can afford it. But this feels like a national title game or bust. Like, if they don't win a Big Ten championship this year, is Ryan Day on the hot seat and getting fired after what has been an amazing, productive tenure? It's insane to think about, but that is the expectation of Ohio State when they return by far what looks like the strongest roster in the Big Ten. The other guy that I didn't have a chance to talk to because I was talking to Josh Whitman, the Illinois Athletic Director, and Brett Bielema, but it's David Braun is interesting because, you know, this is a guy who's never been a head coach before and had an unbelievable year, taking over in ridiculous circumstances at Northwestern and had success. But long-term, can he lead them to success? Because the guy he's replacing in Pat Fitzgerald, even at the end of it, like, he had unbelievable success for a school in Northwestern that probably has no business kind of competing in this conference. So he's got big shoes to fill. So I'm interested to see how that goes long term for Northwestern.
If Day were to be fired, and I understand, because that is just an absolute hive of crazy there. I mean, you use words like insane and crazy, but there is something really true about the words that you choose. That were he to be fired, is that purely punitive or vengeful, or does that come from a belief that someone else could do better?
Yeah, it's an amazing question. I just think it's they can't lose to Michigan, right? It is just Michigan is, they cannot lose to them. That it's the Bears thing of, oh, you can lose to everybody else but beat the Packers.
But we all know, like, that's garbage, lost, though. But Bears fans, we joke about it. But if they are holding a trophy, nobody cares if they lost to the Packers.
Yeah, but losing to the Packers as the Packers go on to hold up a trophy.
Sure.
That feels
obviously different, but I think that's...
And that's what Michigan's doing to Ohio State.
I know, but they believe it.
Right, because they believe for so long, Dan, because they beat Michigan all the time for most of their livelihoods here. So I just think, you know, with Jim Harbaugh gone and with Sherrone Moore, who did a great job in replace of Harbaugh when Harbaugh was suspended, there's an opportunity here for Ohio State to reclaim that throne in the Big Ten. I think Oregon might have something to say with that. Penn State's good. Michigan still has a ton of NFL talent. But it's just, if they don't win a championship this season with all the talent they get back, with, you know, two new teams in the league with Oregon and USC that should be contenders, but might have a, you know, tough kind of transition into the Big Ten. And then a Michigan team that's got a new quarterback, got a new head coach. Like, now is the time to win. So they probably think, if we can't win this year with Ryan Day, then when are we going to win again? Because, you know, when they had Urban Meyer, it was pretty easy for them in the Big Ten.
Jeremy, I know that for the most part, this stuff is done by an algorithm. Has anyone at the Big Ten talked about, at least for the football teams, because I know that they kind of don't care about anyone else in the conference, that maybe you say that you're going to have everyone play each other, but you do your best to make sure that Washington doesn't have to go to Rutgers? Like, does that play a role, the travel play a role at all in how the Big Ten envisions their schedule going forward?
Yeah, I don't have the rules in front of me, Lawrence, but they're trying to keep the West Coast teams from making multiple trips all the way to the East Coast. They're going to try and get UCLA, USC, Washington, Oregon to all play each other as much as possible. There's some protected rivalries that go in that, but they do have rules to try and keep that much travel back-to-back and try and spread that out to where some of these teams might only have to go to the far Eastern time zone, you know, twice or three times, or that these East Coast schools only have to go to the West Coast once per year. So they put a lot of work into this schedule, and the Big Ten has really done a great job of that. They've had to redo this schedule for 2025 like three times already because of the changes of, one, adding USC and UCLA. That was one change, and then had to add Oregon and Washington to this mix as well. So, yeah, they're very aware of the travel issues that can come with this, but the dollars make it all worth it, man.
I love hearing when you describe Ohio State as having an expensive roster that they can afford, because we're finally talking about college sports in the way that we should, as high-level college sports, as these minor league professional developmental leagues that they are. Through that context, is Illinois positioned to matter enough in a new look Big Ten where you've got major markets and national followings? Can they matter enough in television programming? And if not at the moment, can they buy their way into relevance?
A couple questions there, but the biggest part is that is why this Brett Bielema era is so important, is to make Illinois relevant. It is to make, you know, what Brad Underwood has done with the Illinois basketball program, taking it from what was a bottom half Big Ten team in most of the 2010s, as it kind of faded under Bruce Weber and John Gross, into one of the national brands again. Now, I don't think Illinois football is going to be a national brand, but can they get to a point where they're Minnesota making bowl games every year, or get to a point where in 10 years we think of them as a team that can get to eight or nine wins like an Iowa and Wisconsin every year? Like, I think that is a real kind of in time goal that Illinois can accomplish. But yeah, they need resources to do that, but you got to win games to do that as well. Illinois does have a passionate fan base that's mostly about basketball, but if football wins, this fan base does get into it, and they have raised a lot of NIL money to help them in the transfer portal. This is the best transfer class that Brett Bielema has added. Getting Zachary Franklin, a wide receiver, is going to make a big difference. Offensive lineman J.C. Davis, one of the best left tackles in the portal. Dennis Briggs out of Florida State is going to be one of their best defensive linemen. So Terrence Brooks out of Texas, he chose Illinois over USC and Michigan. Like, literally, he was supposed to go take official visits, but Illinois was able to close the deal because of their development of Devin Witherspoon and because they had some competitive NIL for him. So I think they're capable of it, Dan, but I think for donors and for everyone else to step up, like, they have to win games. But the other part of this is Illinois is going to have revenue share. Like, they're going to have revenue sharing in 2025. So Illinois is going to have $22 million to spend on its athletes. Now, they have to raise that money or cut it from their budget. And part of the Big Ten money will be going towards that. But everybody in the Big Ten will have access to giving $22 million to their student athletes. The biggest question is, how does Title IX play into that? The SEC is saying it doesn't apply to that money, that they're going to be 90% going to football. Josh Whitman, a couple months ago, said that Title IX will apply, which would be more like a 55-45 split in front of Mel. So that would be a big difference. And then NIL becomes much more important. So all of these questions still have to be answered, but you got to pour money into the program. You got to pour money into your roster because it is legit. This is professional sports now. And it's going to be fascinating to see how it all ends up. I think for a program like Illinois, though, it can give you a chance to maybe even up the playing field a little bit and be able to get talent that might have gone to Ohio State and been a backup. Maybe you can sell that guy on being a starter, making more money for you, and, you know, obviously developing for the NFL.
Jeremy, did Chip Kelly just figure out, you know what, I'm not really cut out for the whole head coaching thing. I'll just call up plays.
Yeah, because it's a lot easier to do, and he can make millions of dollars of it doing it at Ohio State. But he just got out before he was going to get fired. UCLA didn't have the money to pay out his buyout. And he interviewed for every offensive coordinator job in the NFL and the Big Ten, the SEC. And it's not a bad life to go call plays for Ryan Day, even if he is the one calling plays. I would imagine he is. But yeah, that's a pretty good job. You don't have to do all the CEO stuff. And from what I understand, he wasn't very good at that CEO stuff of shaking hands and raising money at UCLA. So he's better off. But UCLA, man, they're broke. And they hired their program legend, Sean Foster, maybe rile up the fan base a little bit. But that's a program that I think is really going to struggle early on in the Big Ten.
Jeremy, man, you're the man. We appreciate you. Enjoy your time down there in Indy.
Thanks, guys.
That's Jeremy Werner, the publisher of IlliniInquirer.com.
He's great.
Good stuff.
Ready to celebrate an anniversary?
I am ready. And I think not only celebrate, but also add some context to one of the most unlikely great sports achievements of all time.
Let's do it next.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Alexei!
Spoiler alert.
Yes!
Is this a segment about Alexi Janulius?
No.
Alexei!
No.
That's what I think of now.
Shout out to his people in Midlothian. They helped me out after I needed a new license. Shout out to Alexei.
July 23rd, 2009. And I remember, I think it was Mitch who called me and just said, hey, you know, you might want to get in here because this game's going really fast. Like, yeah, you're right. It is going fast. And we're going to
Because we used to carry the White Sox.
Right. And Terry and I were going to be on right after. So, okay, I'll hurry in. And I hurried in. And like, whoa, wait a second. He got the old Perfecto going here. And apparently, for everybody who likes to talk about the jinx and the announcers and the jinx, it was Burley who was
running up and down the dugout saying, I got a perfect game going.
Yeah, and because people were doing the freeze him out thing, don't talk to him. It's like, why is no one talking to me? Just because I have a perfect game going? So I never want to hear any of that again. I mean, it's just, it's garbage. So Burley himself made a mockery of it. But he also, remember, this is a pitcher, a non-velocity pitcher, a finesse pitcher who gave up a lot of hits because he was around the plate a lot. He didn't give up a lot of big innings, but he gave up a lot of hits. And he was pitching with a lineup behind him that was the White Sox bottom of the roster getaway day lineup. They started Scott Podsednik, Alexi Ramirez, Jermaine Dye. Konerko was the DH. Quentin was in left. Beckham at third. Jason Nix, the second baseman. Ramon Castro
is it
catching.
Jason Nix with a Y in there?
Just like his brother Lance with a Y.
That's right.
Lance. Yeah, they're the superfluous Y Nixes. Ramon Castro was the catcher.
What?
I got questions about the Y in Lance, but let's just move on.
Yeah, no one understands it. And Josh Fields, who had the home run in that game, was the first baseman. The team they were playing in the Tampa Bay Rays had a team OPS over 800. Think about that.
That's pretty good.
Going into this game, they had a team OPS over 800.
What's that Cubs' OPS right now?
Seven? Maybe? But like, 650. This is peak Ben Zobrist, who had like, that was just his crazy war season.
What's that lineup?
B.J. Upton, Carl Crawford, Evan Longoria, Carlos Pena, Ben Zobrist, Pat Burrell, Gabe Kapler, Michael Hernandez, and Jason Bartlett. Jason Bartlett of the 903 OPS.
I'm looking up the splits now because Carl Crawford like lives in my nightmares as a White Sox fan. And I wonder if I did the same thing with Mauer this weekend where I'm like, I feel like Mauer just really abused the Sox. It turns out he abused the entire division. That's how you end up in the Hall of Fame. But when it comes to Carl Crawford, I'm like, I feel like every time that guy came up, he hit a triple against the White Sox. Just would get hot and stay hot. So I need to look up his splits real quick.
You guys want to relive some moments?
Alexei!
That ball hit deep in the left center field. Wise back.
Makes the catch!
What a play!
Wade Wise makes the catch! What a play by Wise!
The catch. Dwayne Wise.
The hottest hitter on this team stands in between Mark Burley and perfection.
Alexei! Yes! 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 History!
Indeed it was. It was pretty cool. And Burley just sort of put his hands over his head like, oh, my God.
All right, so it was my imagination. Carl Crawford, decent against the White Sox, but not great. 295, 341, 417. He was like 100 WRC plus against them. Just felt like that. Like, get out of here. Congratulations to Joe Mauer. Freaking Mauer.
See, this guy's all in his head. You know, we just wanted to celebrate an anniversary.
Like, there's another double off the left field wall. Like, go ahead, Joe Mauer. Just keep playing pepper with the wall. Just keep doing it. Yeah, just flipping it out there.
He's a multiple-time batting champion.
Just.
Good player.
Bloop. Bloop.
All right, we need to save Lawrence from himself. Bloop. So we're going to take a brief timeout, and then we are going to say
frickin' Mauer.
Good afternoon to Parkins and Spiegel on the score.
Alexei!
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Alexei!
Spoiler alert.
Yes!
Is this a segment about Alexei Janulius?
No.
Alexei!
No? That's what I think of now.
Shout out to his people in Midlothian. They helped me out after I needed a new license. Shout out to Alexei.
July 23rd, 2009. And I remember, I think it was Mitch who called me and just said, hey, you know, you might want to get in here because this game's going really fast. Like, yeah, you're right. It is going fast. And we're going
to be. Because we used to carry the White Sox.
Right. And Terry and I were going to be on right after. So, okay, I'll hurry in. And I hurried in. And like, whoa, wait a second. He got the old perfecto going here. And apparently, for everybody who likes to talk about the jinx and the announcers and the jinx, it was Burley who was
running up and down the dugout saying, I got a perfect game going.
Yeah, and because people were doing the freeze him out thing, don't talk to him. It's like, why is no one talking to me? Just because I have a perfect game going? So I never want to hear any of that again. I mean, it's just, it's garbage. So Burley himself made a mockery of it. But he also, remember, this is a pitcher, a non-velocity pitcher, it's a finesse pitcher who gave up a lot of hits because he was around the plate a lot. He didn't give up a lot of big innings, but he gave up a lot of hits. And he was pitching with a lineup behind him that was the White Sox bottom of the roster getaway day lineup. They started Scott Podsednik, Alexi Ramirez, Jermaine Dye. Konerko was the DH. Quentin was in left. Beckham at third. Jason Nix, the second baseman. Ramon Castro catching.
Jason Nix with a Y in there?
Just like his brother Lance with a Y.
That's right.
Lance. Yeah, they're the superfluous Y Nixes. Ramon Castro was the catcher.
What?
I got questions about the Y in Lance, but let's just move on.
Yeah, no one understands it. And Josh Fields, who had the home run in that game, was the first baseman. The team they were playing in the Tampa Bay Rays had a team OPS over 800. Think about that.
That's pretty good.
Going into this game, they had a team OPS over 800.
What's that Cubs' OPS right now?
Seven? Maybe? But like, this is peak Ben Zobrist, who had like, that was just his crazy war season.
What's that lineup?
B.J. Upton, Carl Crawford, Evan Longoria, Carlos Pena, Ben Zobrist, Pat Burrell, Gabe Kapler, Michael Hernandez, and Jason Bartlett. Jason Bartlett of the 903 OPS.
I'm looking up the splits now because Carl Crawford like lives in my nightmares as a White Sox fan. And I wonder if I did the same thing with Mauer this weekend where I'm like, I feel like Mauer just really abused the Sox. It turns out he abused the entire division. That's how you end up in the Hall of Fame. But when it comes to Carl Crawford, I'm like, I feel like every time that guy came up, he hit a triple against the White Sox. Just would get hot and stay hot. So I need to look up his splits real quick.
You guys want to relive some moments?
Alexei!
That ball hit deep in the left center field. Wise back.
Makes the catch!
What a play!
Wade Wise makes the catch! What a play by Wise!
The catch. Dwayne Wise.
The hottest hitter on this team stands in between Mark Burley and perfection.
Alexei!
Yes! 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 History!
Indeed it was. It was pretty cool. And Burley just sort of put his hands over his head like, oh, my God.
All right, so it was my imagination. Carl Crawford, decent against the White Sox, but not great. 295, 341, 417. He was like 100 WRC plus against them. Just felt like that. Like, get out of here. Congratulations to Joe Mauer. Freaking Mauer.
See, this guy's all in his head. You know, we just wanted to celebrate an anniversary.
Yeah, like, there's another double off the left field wall. Like, go ahead, Joe Mauer. Just keep playing pepper with the wall. Just keep doing it. Yeah, just flipping it out there.
Multiple time batting champion.
Just
Good player.
Bloop. Bloop.
All right. We need to save Lawrence from himself. Bloop. So we're going to take a brief timeout, and then we are going to say
frickin' Mauer.
Good afternoon to Parkins and Spiegel on the score.
Alexei!
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.